How's it go again?
Hello, and welcome to the Jazz Imposters. Three musicians journey through the world of jazz, one tune at a time. I'm Aaron on electric bass.
I'm Dustin on the drums.
And this is Andres on the saxophone.
Kind of. Where is it? Is it in your bedroom in there somewhere?
It's actually under the bed. It's waiting.
We're back, guys!
Whoa!
Oh my gosh. Feels good. It feels a little strange. I don't know if I remember how to do this. Aaron said it's just like riding a bike.
Yeah, you know, you're going along and then surprise, you fall and skin your knee. It's just like old times.
Oh, man. Yeah, but it's good to be here again. It's a little bit different if you can't tell by listening. Andres is dialed into us remotely from an undisclosed location.
Yep.
Far across the country.
Far, far away now.
I finally moved out of this country. Norway.
It seemed like Oh man, how did you get a visa before the rest of us?
I booked out.
Welcome back to the show. So yeah, we're gonna pick up right where we left off with letter X, and the tune today is Exactly Like You.
Clever, because there are no X tunes in any of the Real Book editions.
We assumed there would be, just naively thinking like there was a song called X-Ray Blues or something.
Yeah, or Xanadu. Come on, there's got to be. Oh, there's I guess a pop song.
Xylophone. There's no xylophone.
Ode to the Xylophone. Nothing.
Something.
Yeah. Nothing like that out there. But yeah, Exactly Like You is as close as we could get, and it seems to be a pretty worthy standard. So.
Yeah.
We're going to go with that one.
And it was an easy re-entry. Nothing too insane.
Yeah, we really needed the training wheels back on the bike in the early goings here in 2021. I have not played a jazz ride pattern probably since the last time I saw you gentlemen in the studio.
What have you been playing? You've been playing like...
Not jazz. Yeah, a little bit of train beats. That's where the money is, man.
Okay,
it's not in the spangling, as it turns out.
The spanglings?
No. But yeah, so felt a little rusty, felt a little unfamiliar today. But you know, I'm happy to be doing it again with you guys. It's exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Exactly Like You. Another one from the Wayback Machine. First published in 1930, February 25th, 1930 to be exact. Music by Jimmy McHugh, lyrics by Dorothy Fields. If those names sound familiar, it's because we've encountered them before.
Wow, of course we have.
Refresh
my memory.
I forgot all those names.
Come on, you guys. They wrote the music and lyrics to On the Sunny Side of the Street,
Okay.
A song we did for the letter O. And this song actually premiered in the same Broadway show called International Revue in 1930. And both of those songs, same musical.
Fun.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of the lyrics, I heard two versions. One is a little friskier than the other one.
Mm.
One says, you know, why should we go out to a show when nobody sings those love songs? Exactly Like You,
right.
Something like that, which was the first version that I heard. It was a very old-fashioned version with no piano and strings and stuff.
Right.
Then I heard Tony Bennett, I think, sing it, and he said, why should we go out to a show when nobody does those love scenes exactly like you? And
that's
so that
Tony,
was a little...
Though.
Right? That's what I thought, but then that's most Tony other Bennett. People said love scenes. So I was wondering
interesting.
What the original...
I saw the first one you mentioned, the sings those... Or, yeah, what was the first one you said?
Nobody Sings Those Love Songs.
Yeah, that's the one that I saw.
Okay.
I think that's the original. I could be wrong, though, now, because I only saw the one set of lyrics, or noticed that there was one set. I didn't listen to Tony's version of this one. But yeah, so one thing that this song kind of made me think about, tell me if this rings true with you guys, but so this song is very lighthearted, very poppy sort of swing song, you know, obviously written for a musical. The year that it was published, 1930, obviously America was in the darkest days of the Depression, the Great Depression. And I think we talked about that too as well with On the Sunny Side of the Street. Like, it was meant to be sort of a hopeful, you know, bright side sort of song in the midst of a real difficult time in American history. And the funny thing, or I guess something I found interesting, was that the show did not do well. It was poorly reviewed and people did not enjoy it. And so that kind of made that, for some reason, just because of the way things are right now,
in the mood, just
in the world. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of when all those celebrities decided to sing Imagine by John Lennon at the beginning of the pandemic. And everyone was like, what are you doing? You know? For some reason, it just conjured that image in my head. And so maybe there's a kindred, you know, element to those two.
That's funny.
This definitely did have this old-timey, like, everything is happy-go-lucky, but in reality, they're eating bread and soup. And that's
right. And when the lyrics say, you know, Mom, I'm glad I listened to you about not getting married too soon, it just like it seems extremely sort of old-fashioned.
Yeah. But no, you know, so yeah, the song initially to that point was not a success because the musical was not a success. And it wasn't until a later version was done by Benny Goodman and his trio that the song sort of became a popular standard at that point. And, yeah, since then you've got versions by all the usual suspects, Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, Dizzy Gillespie with Stan Getz.
I heard a Nina Simone one.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one. That one is a notable one. I think I'll include that one in the show notes for sure.
I think the other one I listened to was which I don't typically listen to, Django Reinhardt, whatever.
Yeah,
that was kind of a fun little. Because I was trying to find more acoustic versions for me to like kind of pick up some licks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which there weren't as many as those. Well, I honestly couldn't find any of them with saxophones.
Yeah, it's more popular with jazz vocalists, it seems like.
I liked a version by Errol Garner. I think he's a piano player. I don't know what time period they're playing, but it was slow and simple and short and had a lot of that playful easiness. The tempo was down, and I just really enjoyed that. I did. I heard piano solos. I heard vocals, a guitar solo or two. Yeah, but not a lot of horns, I guess.
There's a Dizzy Gillespie Stan Getz version.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. I must have missed that one. But I also wasn't really, I wouldn't think to look for it, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, and then so some other notable versions that I listened to that I actually really enjoyed that are maybe branching out of that traditional jazz world is there's an Aretha Franklin version, and she really brings her flavor of music into that standard. It's a really, really cool version. And a Willie Nelson version.
That was a duet with somebody, because whoever sings first, I'm like, wow, I guess that's Willie Nelson.
No, yeah, it
and
wasn't.
And then he
yeah.
comes in with his characteristic right. crackly voice.
Right, yeah. And that one, it still swings. It's almost got like a very Western, country Western swing vibe to it. It's got fiddle, and I think there's maybe some pedal steel guitar and banjo and like some other.
I think it's on an album that has a bunch of Western swing songs, including Over the Rainbow, which is the name of the album.
I know that Willie Nelson did a tribute to Django Reinhardt. It might not be the same record that song is on, but the man can play the guitar. The man can play some jazz.
What genre is? I don't really. It's not the jazz that I like as a sax player really listen to a whole bunch. I knew of the person, but I don't really know. Is it like a subsegment of jazz? Is kind of, you said like country jazz or like. I don't know.
Western swing. Western swing. Yeah. I actually play with a pedal steel guitarist here in town who I've talked about bringing on the podcast. Hopefully.
Of course you do.
Yeah. Well, now that I'm mentioning him, I've got to commit to getting him over here. Great pedal steel guitar player, but loves to play Western swing music. And he actually does a lot of jazz playing and a lot of.
Can you explain a pedal steel guitar?
No, I can't.
Is that like
literally
a theremin?
It is a wonderment to me.
Yeah, it looks nothing like a guitar.
No, it's like a you walk up to it, it looks like a tabletop arcade game with strings across it and like...
And one of those old sewing machine things on the bottom.
Well, I'll leave that to him when he comes on the show. Yeah, that'll be fun.
It took us over a year to figure out visual out, so this will be good.
Yeah.
Of all the versions that I heard, especially with lyrics, there was something that I found myself gravitating towards, and it was kind of keeping honest with the melody that I read off the chart and heard in a few of the recordings. And it had this little interval that I'm going to play. I won't play the whole melody, but just it had this little bit. And I kept, once I heard that interval, it's a fourth pretty much. The singers that didn't do that, I felt like this song was missing something.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good point. I actually read that this is kind of a challenging song for vocalists. Not that I would know. Every song is challenging for me as a vocalist. But the A section, and we'll get into the song more in depth here in a moment, but the A section has some jumps. Like, it jumps around quite a bit. And
those
fourths.
There's an octave exactly like...
Yeah.
That's an octave drop down.
Yeah, and a lot of times you're hearing, like, when you look at this chart, the melody was written, even though it moves around, the rhythm is usually pretty simple. It's usually just this on-the-beat quarter-note rhythm. But most singers take liberty with that and get a lot more creative with the rhythm.
Yeah, another thing I noticed was that the first part would be on, and then the second part would be one. They would stagger that repeat of the melody.
For sure.
And I liked that a lot. And it was interesting that it was consistent across a lot of the melody or playing or singing.
If you want to hear a more contemporary version of this song sung, there's a Diana Krall version. Obviously, she's a contemporary jazz vocalist, and she does a great version of this song as well. Let's jump into this tune. A lot of familiar things to keep it easy for us, again, in our first episode back in quite a while. 32 bar, AABA form.
Mm-hmm. Done it.
Yeah, nothing too crazy there.
Hey, from a learning perspective, I found that I had a challenge remembering how many times we had cycled through the A's. Mm-hmm. Since it goes AABA, I often imagine that last A as the first one of the next cycle.
Right.
So like when we, you'll hear it maybe, but when Dustin and I played the through the chart, I kept having to check, like, is it the first time or the second time? I'm not sure. It's the first time. Give me the B section really heavy, because a couple times I skipped it.
That's one of those things that vocals makes more easy, because that last A section is usually still typically part of the bridge or the chorus, you could think of.
Right, or it's a new set of vocals. Like in the third A section, that's where the vocalist is really happy that he listened, or she listened to her mom.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
it's a cue.
Every time. We get to that, he wants to thank his mother one more time. Yeah. Yeah, so that you know, may have been a little challenging for us to get back in the swing of things, but we figured it out eventually. So yeah, AABA form. The song's got a mostly major, you know, uplifting, happy tonality to it, as we mentioned already. Mm-hmm. The chart we're looking at is in the key of concert, key of C.
C.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, so most of it hangs around C with some 2-5-1 and to get back to C. Mm-hmm. And then the B section goes to F, which is the fourth, which is a very typical kind of raise. Mm-hmm. And then we come back down through a little interesting walk down and turn around back to C.
Yeah.
So it's like a 1-4-1 song that's not very complicated, and I think that lends it to its easy listening.
Definitely.
Kind of feel.
Yeah, and the bridge section does get more, when you're looking at the chart, it does get a little more complex looking as far as the harmony goes, but the melody actually looks a little bit more simple as far as, like, it's just moving up stepwise a lot and up and down stepwise instead of those leaps we were talking about that are in the A section.
Yeah.
Through the bridge section, we sort of had this sort of, as we've seen before in other songs, like this gradual falling down through the keys back to C. So when we raise up to F,
it goes. Sorry for the buzzes.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's kind of F, G, E, E flat.
Mm-hmm. And then the end of our bridge section is filled with all kinds of 2-5 turnaround things to finally land us back into C. Yeah.
There's something I want to point out that I thought was really cool, and it's I'd never thought about it before. I don't know. It sounds very familiar to my ear, so I'm sure I've encountered it. But and we should have the piano going, but it's not really available right now. But it was going from C to the D7.
Mm-hmm.
And that just had this really cool feel that was sort of surprising.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And it didn't really seem like a whole bunch of motion. Mm-hmm. It just kind of lightened things up and opened almost like the whole thing could have been C for 4 bars instead of splitting it. But I really enjoyed that D7 after the C.
Yeah, I think, what you're hearing there, it almost like sounds like a very slight key change or a modulation up to into a brighter key. But really, it's just sort of playing on that 2-5-1. Instead of a D7, they do a D7 just to keep things bright, and then they go to the G and then back to the C. So it kind of has this, it serves two purposes. It kind of lifts the song up just slightly to keep it happy, but then it also works as that regular stand-in for that 2 chord.
You bring in something really interesting, because one of the things I've been doing since our last session is just trying to relax on thinking about stuff and opening up my ears a little bit.
Yeah.
And so a couple of the charts had on the 5th bar where you were talking about, it had a D minor to a G7, which we know is 2-5.
Right.
Other ones skipped the D minor and just had 2 bars of G7.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I heard it both ways.
Yeah.
And depending on the record, I found it really challenging, first of all. Mm. So I tuned into the bass, and the one that I liked, the Errol Garner tune, probably because it was simple and pretty audible, they just played G7 for 2 bars. Like, it was clear that he landed on that G on the downbeat of the 5th bar.
Mm-hmm.
Other songs, it wasn't so clear, and it seems like it would work either way.
I think it does. Yeah, I think the melody, if you look at the melody in that bar, it could be either. I think it just sort of depends on like how much, if you want to make the changes a little bit more turbulent or like more changes just so you have more opportunities to explore soloing. Adding the 2-5 change does also like kind of have the effect of building up that momentum to get back to the tonic a little bit more.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the melody. So just to hint at the melody a little bit, those notes fit the chord of C very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing 3-7-5-6. And if you think of it in the same way, because it kind of modulates down, you get a very similar 3-7, 2-6, excuse me, not 5-2-6. Mm-hmm. So it's almost playing the same pattern, but adjusting one note just a little bit.
Right.
In that case, it would imply the G more than the D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I think, to the question you had, or sort of the point that you made, like G7 is probably what worked there better for a musical, but then like when bebop musicians got a hold of it, they were like, let's throw the two in there, man. I want to do some Dorian right there, you know.
So I have to admit, I really enjoyed figuring out the melody on this one and letting that lead my experience. I know I should have been doing that more, but I just didn't on so many of the other tunes, so I really enjoyed that, and I think it made this more of a song than some of the other ones that we've done, which I think is just a better way to appreciate and play it. And I think I enjoyed it more because of that. Like I feel that in my mind as we're playing through performing it.
Yeah, and none of we're not looking at a Thelonious Monk or Charles Mingus harmony in this song. Like,
right, it's simpler.
It's pretty simple. There was one chord that stood out to you, Aaron, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
In the bridge section, in the second to last bar, we have this E minor 7 to E flat diminished 7, and that's pretty consistent across any version of the chart that I've seen. Yeah.
So when I was listening again, and Andres, I'd like you to chime in about the solo too, because I wasn't listening so much for that. I was listening for the bottom end. But what I did not hear in that end of that bridge was this really heavy motion of like. Like, I didn't hear the bass drag that chromatic down, kind of like I see it written, E to E flat to D. Like it, and I was like, well, why don't I hear that? And so when I went and investigated as well as I could some of the bass lines, I didn't really hear it at all in the bass. It sounded like that bass player was hanging out in C in a very sort of consonant and easygoing way. And so that's why I brought it up. I'm like, how can that E flat function in C where it's okay to play a C over it? It sounds like okay. And I didn't understand.
Hmm. Yeah. What was your approach, Andres?
Was it small, therefore unimportant?
At, diminished. No, the whole bridge I wanted all the recordings I listened to, the bridge was very underwhelming, and I was expecting to hear more of a change. And those last bars that you're talking about, I heard the same. Like, I was expecting more. So when it came to me soloing, I wanted to focus on that, but I don't know. I somehow always missed it because I'm typically always listening to what I'm recording, and if they don't really push it, then I don't naturally hear that progression.
You bring up an interesting thing because I think it works better with the lyrics because it's almost like an echo in the lyrics. And then it's back at the A part. So it's almost like the lyrics are bouncing off each other. And so I bet you it helps that bridge along in that section.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of confounded by that chord too. Like, at first I thought it's, you know... You guys remember my favorite theory buzzword? I thought it was a tritone substitution.
I haven't heard that in a year.
That's right.
I just triggered you both. I saw the anguish wash over both your faces.
My tritone substitution has been killing me.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think of E minor 7 as a 2, wanting to land on the next measure, which is that D, then that E flat diminished 7 could be a stand-in for... A7.
Yay. That makes sense. Or. Yes. And that's how it's been explained.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing is that, like, I just don't see how the melody works with that harm that, like, cause in the melody in that moment, we're playing a B.
It goes back to the head.
Yeah. So
it's the same as the top. So. You hear
right
again.
I know what it is. Is they?
What is it?
They didn't care. They just put it down.
Just the answer.
We've definitely seen these chromatic walkdowns before, and especially in these older tunes. It seems like a mark of when a tune was written. If I didn't have the copyright date in front of me, if I saw the one chord with a 6 next to it. And if I saw one of these chromatic walkdowns at the end of a section, it's like, oh, this song is definitely before 1950.
Yeah, so when I listened, I didn't hear anything heavy or weird in the bass. I heard what sounded like hanging around that C and hanging around the G as usual. Mm-hmm. And so it spurred me to kind of ignore it. Andres, very small little chords there, ignorable. And just kind of fake it with a C all the way after the E.
Yeah.
So I could be very wrong.
Yeah.
Well, as a saxophone player listening to the bass, I wouldn't be mad at you for.
Well, I appreciate you even notice I'm here. Thank you.
Other than that, though, the chart doesn't really throw us any curveballs. So
chart?
For that, we can be thankful.
It's a good one to get your fingers in there. There's no bleeding involved.
Yeah. Next week
tears.
It's back to Wayne Shorter, guys.
Come on.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, we should mention because Andres is remote, we did have to do things a little bit differently this go around, and the rest of our episodes will probably follow this format to some degree of success or another.
I had to find new Norwegian
musicians
to, here, yeah.
Yeah. Do they play jazz in Norway?
Oh, yeah. They're avid Jazz Imposter listeners, aren't they?
Yeah, we do have some listeners out there in Norway.
Thank you, Norway.
All our listeners in Norway, hit up Andres, who is actually in Alabama, but...
It's just a stone's throw away from Norway, though.
It's stone's throw away, just across the pond, if you will. And yeah, so the way that we went about this was tricky, you know, to sort of devise a plan to be able to play this song.
It took an entire year to figure this out.
We basically had to, have Andres record his part initially with just a, you know, very vanilla play along version of this song. Send it to Aaron and I, and Aaron and I recorded our play along to it only moments before pressing record on this episode. And as much as that to me did not feel like, you know, the most desirable form of playing jazz with musicians, you know, I think we tried to stay as true to it as we could under the circumstances. And, you know, Aaron and I did not rehearse this song. We did not splice any takes together.
Did you guys play with my track?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's how'd I do?
You did great.
Okay, good.
The experience actually was a lot of me listening to Dustin listening to a metronome, and then some jazzy saxophone in the background.
So nothing has changed.
Well, yeah, at first Aaron and I tried to play just with each other, and then it'd be like, listening to the saxophone, it's like, I'm not sure if we're lining up with him or not. There's really no way to know.
Right.
I mean,
we were locked in.
Yeah, yeah, we
were. I don't know about the
tight.
Rest of it.
We were good to go. So then it was like, better put a metronome in just in case. Since Andres had one to guide him for the most part, it was like, we better not do Andres' solo the disservice of Aaron and I sounding like we're playing really good together and Andres sounding like he's floating off, you know, on a bad trip or something. But, so that was kind of the process we had to undergo. It was new for everybody here. I've done remote recording sessions for bands, you know, that's pretty standard as far as other styles of music go that aren't improvisational, but with jazz it's just, yeah, it's not the way it should be, but you know, we got to get this podcast out to you people somehow. Yep. You know,
they're demanding it.
Take it or leave it.
There were times it lined up in kind of an obvious way, like going to the bridge, you know, you would pause and then, you know, really come out on the bridge, or at returning from the last A section to the next round, it would be a strong entry and we would all sort of do that naturally. And so it sounded like we were playing together a couple times. Like maybe I would hit the high C on the bass and you were hitting a high note as well.
Okay.
And Dustin, maybe you crashed the cymbal.
Yeah.
So that worked just because we kind of know how to shape it a little bit.
And having the solo first, even though it must have been no fun for you, Andres, sorry. Like I was able to at least react to what you had done days earlier, you know, as if you were here in the room, you know, even though you did not have that luxury. So how was it for you, Andres?
So I had a lot of technical issues. So I don't know if people have understood the relationship that we have as a group is Dustin is the smart one who's been able to figure out all the cables and all the buttons. So me trying to learn, you know, getting the right size of dongle, whatever those are, you know, that I think that was the biggest challenge. But once everything... like equipment-wise, was figured out. And when we played that dummy track, I don't know what its technical term is, but it was.
I think it's the nice term is backing track.
Backtrack. It was a dumb track.
Play along.
Play along. Well, Jamie Ingersoll tracks have more
One, two,
more swing,
three,
and more soul to these. This was very robotic, and then I really struggled because I rely on my ear a lot, and maybe that's a crutch of mine.
I think it's what this type of music you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's the opposite of a crush. I think it's actually playing well.
You know, but when I definitely lost some creative points. And I was like running out of ideas. I wasn't able to really get the communication of music. So it was difficult. It was definitely difficult. And it's for such an easy chart, it was difficult to be creative and improvise to it, something like that. So, which is a good challenge in a sense. I was like, okay, maybe I need to stretch myself and get myself out of that little.
Is it like the difference between journaling and having a conversation?
I've done
like you just talking to yourself or having a pep talk in the mirror, like, okay,
right,
you can do this, man. It's gonna sound fine. It's, you know, versus yeah. having other people.
It'd be
the
like
room.
The difference of like practicing like a speech in front of the mirror and then and doing it in front of, you know, a live audience or something. You know, there's some feedback that is so like even take the bridge. You know,
mm-hmm.
We all know it's there that AAB. A and then AABA, but it's so easy when it all sounds the same kind of patterns. You kind of going, oh, which A am I on? Just the same challenge you had, but mm-hmm. I kind of rely on the drummer and the bass player to drive that B section to go, okay, this is the B section. And I think I probably missed at least once or twice, maybe just once, the bridge on it.
This makes me think of knowing the song and knowing the melody can probably close the gap a little bit.
Yeah.
If you're thinking like, oh, this is the part where, you know, mom says this, it's something to keep things moving along. I actually read one of those sort of jazz help things once recently, and they were saying like, go ahead and get to know the song. Know what it's about. Is it light? Is it cheerful? Is it dark? You know, what are the lyrics about? And using that as a tool to know the song.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I was going to ask a quick question. Which, did you guys record on all three speeds?
No, we did the slowest one you sent.
Yeah.
We attempted the second fastest one. And I think we made it through. Aaron, I think, missed one of the changes somewhere or something happened. And it was like, let's go back to the slow one again, you know?
Yeah. I think my best recording was the third one, the fastest one.
Well, we could try it. When we get done talking to you, Aaron and I can go back and give it our best. But we're kind of tired.
It gave me a little bit more time to, I don't know, even though it was quicker, it gave me more time to get my phrasing right, you know?
Yeah. I mean, by that point, you've kind of warmed up with the other two, you know? You've worked your way up to the fastest one, yeah. Wasn't sure what tempo to go with this song, you know? That's another thing that we can't really decide together. It's like, let's see how this one sounds when Andres does it, and then we play it. And then,
And even the recordings out in the world, they range from, you know, to something super peppy and fast where, like the Willie Nelson Western Swing one, they're booking.
Yeah, there's probably... Like, if you're a fan of any variety of jazz, there's a version of this song in that variety.
Yeah,
there's like hundreds
right.
of versions of it. We just only mentioned a few of the more notable ones or the ones that we listened to that we enjoyed. But yeah, there's everything from like New Orleans, like street style, you know, jazz.
Oh, yeah.
Like brass band stuff, all the way to like, yeah, blazing fast, you know, much more modern.
But is there an Iwi version?
There probably is, man. I'm not going to rule it out.
And if there's not, that's your niche, man.
I was thinking about that. Actually, I might want to try that when we record because I'd be able to plug it in. I wouldn't have to subject all my neighbors to late night jazz music.
Yeah.
Which I don't think.
I don't know. I'm still not enamored with the Iwi. I think we got to find the right tone.
Yeah, there's something we haven't hit yet. There's an uncanny saxophone valley between the saxophone and the Iwi that we have not traversed to this point.
Man.
But yeah, so anyway, yeah, that's
it.
What we did. That was it. Yeah, so we hope you enjoy this version of Exactly Like You. We'll finish the show off with the song, I guess, since we already recorded it.
No surprises.
Yeah. In the show notes, we've got chart for the music so you can follow along. We've got links to the song. By this point in time, I'll also probably have a link so that if you want to support the podcast, we're going to have some merch for sale.
Ooh.
That's pretty exciting.
Wow. Can I get some?
You can.
All right.
Aaron,
Justin.
No discount, though.
Are you trying to get me a plane ticket back? Is that what's happening here? Is this a surprise?
No, yeah. I mean, as it was mentioned by Andres, everybody had to do a little bit more heavy lifting to make this show continue because of our circumstances. And so that did involve some amount of investment by Andres and Aaron.
I procrastinated long enough that you just invited me over instead.
I noticed
you got vaccinated
set of
and then you were allowed back.
Is that a new kit you got behind you? Is that what
no,
you invested
no,
in?
No, this is the same. I had to dust this one off, man. It's been a while, but... please, if you enjoy the podcast, consider supporting it, buy some of our merch, you know, And also, you know, I just want to thank everybody for continuing to listen to the podcast, even though we haven't done anything productively in the last year. I heard from many of you who are still enjoying and listening and discovering and supporting the show, and that's awesome. And so very grateful to all of you. And if you want to reach out or if you have any other questions or requests, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook or Instagram. I think I do have a Twitter for this podcast. I haven't signed in and maybe ever, but and then yeah, jazzimposters@gmail.com. You can reach us there. But yeah, until next time, this has been Dustin on the drums,
Aaron on electric bass,
and Andres on the saxophone.
And yeah, here's Exactly Like You, and we'll see you when we see you. Thank you.